And now, the Big D and Bubba Weekly Podcast.
Big D and Bubba, they have a show 5 days a week, but they don't get to say everything that's on their mind, so they have an extra one, and that's how we get the podcast, the podcast, the podcast. Big D and Bubba Podcast, the podcast, the podcast.
Sing along.
Big D and Bubba Podcast.
The podcast is sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better parts, better prices every day.
Third day.
And I don't have a gold for you guys today. It's funny because we just road tripped this past weekend, and my wife was like, the first, because she doesn't listen to, you know how our spouses are. They don't want to know what you were really up to. No. So she doesn't listen to our podcast on a regular basis.
They don't care.
Yeah, because they're too close to it. So she's like, we're on the road trip. She's like, I want to listen to your podcast. I was like, really? So we did, and we listened to it. Several episodes, and the first time she didn't quite understand the gold at the beginning of the show, and I said, look, if you're a podcast listener, you know there's always something that we go back to that happened during the week and all that kind of stuff, and she's like, by the third podcast, she was like, I love that gold thing you guys do.
Yeah,
she's like, it's just like it's an inside joke that I feel like I'm in on, so if I hear it on the radio, I'm like, that's exactly it.
Okay.
You're in. You got it.
You can always go back to the OKs.
Okay.
To the OK trio.
Okay.
You can pull those up.
Yeah,
those are always good.
We could. By the way, I made something, and I want to share it because we're about to introduce our guest, and a little bit of it has something to do with him. That's my beat that I'm working on right now.
Yes.
And the actual sound of a M4 and a 50 cal.
That's right.
Yeah, a Barrett 50 cal.
The bass drum in there is a Barrett 50 cal.
Really?
Bubba's bed that he's so happy.
My little beat, man.
And our guest, Chris Barrett, president of Barrett Firearms. Barrett 50
Chris,
cal.
If you want to license that, I'll let you.
I would like that to play every time I enter a room.
Wouldn't that be the best ever? Song. That would be the best.
Your walk-up music.
Like in baseball, you're walking up.
Oh, yeah.
So, welcome to the show, man. And we're big fans of the products, and you know, we believe it's a really great story, and we'll get into it. You know, but I think it's one of those mix of the American dream, right time, right place, connections, patriotism. It's a little bit of all that. But for those who don't know, give us kind of the 25-cent tour of the history of the company with your father and yourself and all that.
Yeah, it's and thank you guys for having me. I really appreciate this.
Thank you.
So the company was started by my father and officially in 1982. So my dad was always a creative person. You know, in high school, he owned his own photography business. He was already operating a business that was making money for him. And he worked for another photographer for a very short time, but always just a creative guy, but always was a gun guy also. Didn't necessarily grow up hunting. He just had this this interest and fascination with the history of firearms, and they're just cool. I mean, as a lot of us know that turn into gun people, they're just fun to study. They're neat little mechanisms, and there is history attached to them.
Mm-hmm.
So he was always interested. He was a shooter and a really great shooter. He shot competitively. He was a volunteer deputy on the Rutherford County Sheriff's Department, and he shot in some of the matches they had. You know, just kind of loved the whole life and loved guns and the history of it. And one day while doing photography work for an actual Nashville company that used to be up here called Ramo Company, he was doing a photo shoot for them on Percy Priest Lake. They made mounts to put the big 50 cal machine gun on, like the one we know from World War II, and they actually made that machine gun as well. So he was doing a photo shoot for them out here on the lake. If you can imagine, early morning, Percy Priest, there's probably folks going fishing. And then you've got this like riverine patrol craft out there with guns mounted on it with guys with like flight helmets on. And, and this is 1981. And, you know, he tells the owner of that company, he says, you know, I always wanted a 50 cal. He said, I'm going to design one. He's 28 years old at the time. And the guy's like,
he wanted one, so he's going to just make
right,
one.
Yeah.
That's what everybody does.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, it was those 50 cals are like 75 pounds. You know, they eat belts of 50 cal machine gun at like, you know, $5 a shot. And they're not that practical, like for somebody to just use for fun. So he said, I'm going to design a shoulder fired one. And of course, you can imagine the guy's response, like, oh, okay. Right. You know, that's all right.
You're going to make one.
Good job with that. All right. Let me know how that goes. And, you know, 9 months later, he was on the guy's doorstep with a prototype. You know, he, at the time he had talked to the guy, he said, you know, if I can design this thing and make it work, is this something your company would make? And the guy, again, as you might do, was like, oh yeah. Okay, sure. Yeah. Like thinking we'll never hear from you again. Well, he showed up with this thing. The company couldn't do it. They were having troubles of their own at the time, and he went into business for himself.
Wow, that's scary.
That's how these things happen. And it's just, I think part of it is that that inexperience of youth and the you remember, you know, when we were younger, like every single thing was possible. There was nothing we couldn't do. And that's part of why we win sometimes. Is because you just did it. You just jumped off the diving board and went for it.
Didn't know any better.
And that's what he did.
We call it throwing your hat over. It's an old thing that, what was it, Reagan that said it? And he basically said, when I come to a major life decision, you know, you're either all in or you're not. And he's like, one way to do it is think of it like a fence. Mm. You throw your hat over. Once your hat's on the other side, you have to go get it.
Yep.
So there is no fail. You got to just do it.
So the company, your father, he creates his own company. Mm-hmm. And then he has the 50 cal. And is he, like, how do you make that company work? Are you going to conventions trying to sell your gun?
Yeah, well, number one, big disclaimer, neither one of us are business people. You know, and a lot of entrepreneurs actually are not. Entrepreneurs are a lot of times a spark that starts a flame, but they're not necessarily conventional business people. So dad at the time when he was getting this started did not know a lot of these principles either. So you don't understand, you know, how to capitalize a business or finance things or maybe even marketing. You just have a dream. So he did it just that way, grassroots. He did go to conventions. You know, literally, dad was always a van man. We always had a cool van. You know, it was like a Dodge van.
Like conversion van?
Oh, yeah.
Like captain chairs van?
Absolutely.
TV in the back van?
Yeah, total. Damn. Total creep van. Yeah. We had a Dodge van. I remember there was the old photography van. And then we went to Ford's, and he had these, always had the conversion van with all that stuff, like with the blinds in the back. But
the blinds that go up, they fold onto each other.
Yeah, they crinkle up. Yeah.
And the seats are like that weird velvety kind of,
you know, this van,
and it went, and it's probably the seats were maroon.
No, this one was on a blue theme. It was an 84 E150.
Okay. When he was describing it, though, I saw maroon too. So yeah. We've all seen some version of this van. Yeah. No,
we've all seen it. I mean, you know, how many bands have started out of a van? How many businesses have started out of a van or a garage? That's what you do. It's a mobile office. And so, you know, he had the van, went to like the Dallas Gun Show, which at the time was the biggest like gun show in the world, and set up a table. You know, it wasn't that expensive. Set up a table, put a television with a VHS on it, and, you know, you play a loop of you firing this gun. And mm-hmm. that's what got people initially interested. And then he kind of went from there and, you know, started learning about how you get exposure back then. You know, we didn't have internet and social media, so you have to grassroots get out there and get in front of people. And worked his way on up to shows like the Association of the United States Army, which is a huge show inside the Beltway in D.C. for all of the defense contractors and defense suppliers that supply the U.S. and other militaries. And he kind of weaseled his way into that show. That he could not afford a table at. So he took this huge gun around to like people that made night vision and said, hey, you know what would look really cool with your night vision? Like, you know what would get a lot of attention? This huge gun with your night vision on top.
And they're like, yeah, of course it would.
And it would make your night vision look small. Back then, it was like, this stuff was huge.
Yeah.
Right.
So, he kind of, that's what you do. You shoehorn your way, you suitcase into stuff. Though a lot of times that's against the rules and in these things, but it's not when a vendor is putting your product in their booth. So he really just grassrooted the thing like that. And until the right people took attention.
How long did that take?
It took, you know, it was late 80s when some militaries actually started going, hey, what is this thing? And a lot
of
people,
it wasn't the U.S. first, right?
It was not the U.S. first. And another big thing that I hear, a big misconception, is that this rifle was quote unquote designed for the military. It absolutely was not. I just told you how it was designed. This was a American dude who wanted to shoot the biggest cartridge you could legally own, and he just did it. It was not designed for a military requirement. In fact, people laughed at him when he said what he was going to do with this. And, you know, because it was inconceivable. Everybody knew the 50 cal as the cartridge that fired out of this, you know, 75 pound belt fed monster. Like, there's no way when somebody tells you, I'm going to shoot that from my shoulder, you don't, that doesn't sound right.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he designed it for himself. And, you know, the U.S. was not the first one to look at it.
It was actually Sweden.
Huh. Sweden. And they adopted it for the reason that the U.S. later did, as an explosive ordnance disposal tool. So it wasn't necessarily a weapon. And this is how it really got into the U.S. military. And we'll just skip to that. The Air Force. The U.S. Air Force started, they adopted it as a explosive ordnance disposal tool. It's very difficult for the U.S. military to buy a firearm, to adopt a new firearm. And that's a significant thing in the history of our company also. It is a big deal when the U.S. military says, this is our new gun. So, you know, everybody knows the M1911, the 1911 pistol, or the M14 or the M1 Grand or the M4. You know, these are M guns. They have an M designation, which means this huge process has been gone through for the U.S. military to say, this is a weapon for us now. I can't even tell you how big the procurement process is. It takes years to get that. So it's like a life achievement if this ever happens to you.
Sure.
So ours didn't get in that way originally. It was the Air Force said, hey, we can use that to shoot unexploded ordnance. So when we see things like IEDs or, you know, some mine that's left over, a bomb that did not explode, you go to a safe standoff distance and you do what they call smutting. I can't remember what that stands for, but it's like
stuff from far away.
Yeah, something like that. You damage the bomb so that it doesn't have a high order explosion and hurt people. So they would stand back, you shoot it, and okay, now we can walk up and get rid of this thing. Explosive ordnance disposal. Well, somewhere along the line, you know, Army Rangers was like, you know, they're crossing paths with these guys. I'm like, what is that thing you're shooting?
That's,
you know,
cool.
Yeah, Army Rangers break stuff. This is like in the military, this is what, you know, Rangers do. They're the ones you send in to just like destroy everything and clear a path. Mm-hmm. And so they see this gun. I'm like, hey, that looks like a weapon to me. And they kind of unofficially started getting them and using them in that role. And it wasn't until the 2000s that Dad's rifle achieved that lifetime honor, multiple lifetime honor of getting an M number. So it became the M107. When the U.S. Army finally said, hey, we're going through the process, we're doing the safety certification, testing this thing, like, it's all interbranch, like all the branches, SOCOM, Air Force, everybody's got their say on what the M107 is going to be, and it takes a long time. When you get that many dudes in a room trying to decide on what kind of gun we're going
to
shoot.
So many chefs. You get too many chefs in the kitchen.
And you're talking about dudes and guns. And it's like everybody's so personal about that. I mean, it's, even though it's the Army, it's still like that. So, yeah.
So when you get that certification and it's officially official as a military weapon, that changes everything for the company. I mean, right?
It absolutely changed everything for our company.
I mean, you went from, I won't say zero, but mm-hmm. you went from 20 miles an hour to
That's correct.
Light
because
speed.
The rest of the world, you know, the United States, despite what you may say on the news media, has, you know, allies everywhere that love us and respect us. And so when the U.S. military says, okay, that's our new rifle, or that's our new vehicle, or we're doing this with our uniforms, everybody else, they go, oh, well, what did the U.S. just do? Because, you know, they went through an exhaustive process to come up with that. And, you know, hey, we lead the way on a lot of stuff. I'm sorry to say it, but we lead the way. And
why are you sorry to say it?
It's true.
Yeah, I know. I'm not sorry to say it.
Yeah, you're safe here.
Okay. This is my safe space.
You're amongst friends.
Yes, so it did change everything, and not only that, I mean, yes, it changed things financially for the company and for the growth of the company, but especially for my dad, you know, just as a personal thing, to be among people who have designed a rifle that was adopted by the U.S. military and received an M number.
There aren't many.
There's none alive, but except for him. And, you know,
about that.
Yeah.
It's like Browning.
It's Browning. And, you know, maybe Sam Colt, if you give him credit for designing a lot of the stuff. And it's like, there's very, very few. There are other guns that we have, you know, Eugene Stoner, the M16. He gets credit for that one totally. Some of the other equipment and guns that we use are not really solely designed by one person. They were kind of like evolutions of another person's design or done with a team. And there's nothing wrong with that. Like, I applaud, like, all of our ingenuity and the creativity people have, but, you know, very rarely has like one dude sat down and drawn a gun that became this. John Browning is one, you know.
And he's long dead. Browning died, you know, in the 30s or 40s.
Right.
So
So
does she got a cool buck mark? Does, I'll tell you.
Does your dad just sleep on piles of money? Now, is that just what he does?
That's what he stuffs the mattress with.
No.
He's surfing like Scrooge McDuck.
Yes.
That's a good visual. You know. He is. No, my dad is actually, he's, you know, fiscally conservative. He's financially conservative. So he's got a lot of fancy cars, but he built all of them, you know. And
of course he built them.
And his Maserati's a few years old. You know, he ain't got the brand new one. So it's, nice. But he does, he's got an old car collection. Yeah, you know, so he's. Yeah, he's not super fine. He's flashy on a budget.
No, I like it. And so now you're the president of the company, and you're handling all of the current needs of what. I mean, how often does a military, like, once you do a shipment to our military, are you constantly sending more, or is it kind of like, hey, we got, you know, I'm just using a number, we've got 100 of them, we're good, we're set for a year or whatever?
There is almost always some little thing going on like that. Now, when M107 happened, like I said, that was in early to mid 2000s. Yeah, we went to work rapidly filling that order as fast as we could. And then, you know, the numbers reached and they have their rifles. But, you know, that is a contract that's open. The Marines say, hey, you know, we need 50. And the Navy can buy some off the same contract. And then some get replaced and repaired. So it's ongoing. And then we have other military stuff going constantly. I mean, it's
like Sweden and all these other places too.
It's 70 nations. Wow. So, you know, and it's weird to think that a company in Murfreesboro, Tennessee is interacting with this many people around the world, but we are.
And are you doing modifications and changes? People go, can you make it do this?
Yeah. Norway, all right. Scandinavia had a big effect on what that rifle. Norway was the forebearer to the M107. That the U.S. military bought. They bought their rifle before the M107 became official, and Norway had a list of things. They said, hey, we like the gun, but, you know, can it have a 21-inch long scope rail on the top, and can you angle it this much, and can you go to this kind of bipod with spikes on the feet? And they had this list of things. We did it all. That rifle essentially became the M107. So, you know, I guess the U.S. saw and was like, hey, that's a pretty good setup. You know, Norway is real tip of the spear also. They're real high-end operators, and they're with it, so.
Because they are Vikings.
Right.
That's why.
Raiding.
That's right, because if anyone knows guns,
Vikings.
It's Vikings. I don't think that's a thing.
Modern Vikings do.
Modern Vikings.
So
can we just, for just a second, before we move on to anything else, Chris brought 50 cal bullets that are actually bottle openers, and so because of that, I'm
going to. You're going to celebrate?
I'm going to celebrate and have a beer.
We're going to open some red,
white,
and blue.
Would you like a beer?
Yeah, I'll do the. Oh, yeah. Bud Light.
Carson?
Beer? This is fantastic.
No, I'm responsible.
You're responsible? I don't care.
I'm driving.
Bubba's, it's after 11 a.m., right?
That's right.
All good.
Some of us still have to work.
America.
That's why I know.
Yeah, America.
Hey, isn't it Friday when we're taping this?
That's right. It is.
America.
Drinking a beer.
So, you know, we took. Carson had never.
Oh,
shot a gun ever before. Never been around them, so we took her to the range and shot, and she did great. She did really well.
She did great when she got used to the sound of the gun going off in the lane next to us.
Still don't like it.
Yeah.
Still.
What? You didn't have fun by the time it was over?
I mean, I still was very upset that they let somebody else next to us.
Yeah.
Like,
you took her to an indoor range?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they're like, what's the right word?
She was actually probably two lanes away from the other guy. So we're
still
talking
loud.
10 feet.
So loud.
So loud.
So loud.
Every time
he had no courtesy.
Go.
It's like bowling. I needed some space, man.
Oh, you don't want to bowl next to somebody?
No. You do courtesy lanes. They're like, oh, no. Like, yeah. Like, you're supposed to, like, pass it back and forth. He did. No.
A couple of handguns.
He was not doing bowling etiquette. That was.
What else did we have?
Had, a little AR and which she did well. I think that she did really well because she didn't like the bigger guns. Like, I had a 40 Smith and Wesson, and she preferred the 380 and the AR. Those were the two that I think she liked the most because they weren't scary. There wasn't a whole lot of kick and a bunch of noise.
Oh, well, then you're gonna love the Barrett.
Yeah. If you shot it, you know it's all bark, though. It's really loud, but people shoot it, and they're like, they turn around, and one, they're like smiling so big their face is going to crack open.
Yeah.
And they're like, wow, that didn't kick. I'm like, yeah, it's amazing for something so big and powerful. It's just all concussion.
Explain to people how, because, you know, there's so many, you know, this gun has been has been seen in all kinds of movies and, you know, TV shows and whatnot. It is
the movie gun now. Yeah,
for sure. And I think a lot of people don't realize when snipers are using this rifle, there's always someone with them, like a spotter.
Right.
Can you explain how that works?
Yeah, a sniper team, I'm going to use that term to kind of generally cover all the precision marksmen, you're never really just shooting by yourself. You cannot, maybe in movies, sometimes you see it with a lone guy making some crazy long shot. That is next to impossible. Your spotter is actually, I don't want to like down talk any great shooters, but he's doing like 75% of the work, he or she, because it's about the wind. It's about identifying the target, you know, accurately ranging the target. But then I started with wind. Wind is the most important thing. So they see the target, you know, 1700 people shoot 2000 yards and meters. Now a mile is 1700 ish yards. People are shooting at 2000.
Wasn't there a British guy who made a 2 mile shot?
Right. That's right.
And so, but think of the changes of the wind between there, you
temperature
and the target.
Temperature changes yeah. make a difference. The wind, the curvature of the earth, you know, which
miles,
direction
yeah.
you're shooting, all mm-hmm. that stuff kind of really plays into it.
I've been to classes with some of the best people in the world, and the entire class, you know, you can spend 1 week on wind. Because, again, you know, holding a rifle steady with the crosshairs on the target and gently pulling the trigger without the gun moving, there's actually – you know, again, not taking away from anybody, but there's a lot of people that can do that. There's a lot of people that can shoot a great group at 100 yards or at 25 feet inside of a pistol range. You hold the gun steady, and you have excellent trigger control and perfect sight alignment. That's one thing. But the guy looking through the scope and says, okay, we have a target at 1,800. I think I detect a 8-mile-per-hour wind from the right coming at us kind of like at a 45-degree angle.
Now, how do they know that?
So there's several different ways. We can get wind speed accurately with a device called a Kestrel, which is an atmospheric meter that measures wind and temperature and things
but
like this.
But that's only the wind speed of where you're standing.
At your station, yeah, where you are. The person looking through the scope, you're looking down there and you say, I see grass that's kind of bending to the left at a 45-degree angle. I think that's a 90-degree, 5-mile-per-hour wind because I know that grass – in this region kind of bends at a 45.
Patrick's all like, oh, what?
That's what's happening. And, you know, and I've been out at some of these things and you say, okay, I think I see a 5-mile-per-hour wind. So hold right, you know, 1.2 mils on your scope and you shoot into the wind, send it into the wind and it curves in. And then you miss. And then somebody that knows what they're doing gets behind the scope and says, oh, you see that little gully at 800 meters? Look at the trees in that little gully. It's going from left to right about the same speed as yours at the target is going to the left. It canceled out that wind, you know, hold that on, send it, boom, hit, you know? So it's just weird stuff like that, like looking across valleys and it's the highest form of a martial art.
It's when you see those guys where they're like, you see some, because you see a lot of these videos, especially right after the Middle East conflict started, you would see all these videos pop up on YouTube and it would say like mile and a half shot. And then basically the guy has to aim 12 feet to the upper left of someone to actually get to the real target. One shot, one kill. He shot something. He aimed 12 feet away, and they knew that the bullet was going to curve, drop, etc., just right.
Yep.
It's amazing.
And a lot of these where these guys have made these crazy long shots, they had good data, or dope. You know, dope stands for data of previous engagements. And it's like, it means we shot, and this is what we recorded happened, so we know now what to do next. So if you've been watching a place for a week, and man, you know, people don't get this about our soldiers too. Some of these guys that are doing these jobs, you may be watching something for a week with nothing happening. Can you imagine? You
just
know,
laying
like,
there?
Yeah, just like there is boredom and terror and everything for our guys that are out there fighting.
Songs stuck in their heads.
Yep.
Like horrible. Mary had a little lamb. Over and over and over.
Well, sometimes they Well, may have taken a couple of shots already in that area, so they kind of know what's going on, so they have data of previous engagements. And sometimes that will help you. Like when the right target presents itself, it's like, okay, hey, we made that shot last week. Let's do it again right now. So, yeah.
When will we have, like, rounds that you can fire and they just, like in the movies where it just tracks and it just...
We have that.
We have it already.
We got that.
What? Yeah. That's like some Bugs Bunny stuff.
No, it really... Yeah, that's right. That's
so
right.
So you can fire it, and the bullet will just find the person no matter what?
Can't you? Isn't it where you mark the target, and basically then it's guided that way?
Well, like a missile?
That's what we call fire control technology. That's not even what he's – that's almost easy now. That actually is readily available. When we talk about steerable projectiles, that's coming. And it's – I say it's already here. You can't buy it at Walmart, but it's like – it's there are programs where projectiles are being fired from – rifles, essentially, with bullets that steer through there.
Speaking of, you say you can't buy it at Walmart. So let's change the gears for just a second, and if you don't mind me bringing up something a little controversial.
Okay.
Barrett 50 cal, all the 50 cal guns, because you have several different models.
We do. Right? Yeah.
Are illegal in almost all states?
A lot of the states. Like California, you cannot own a 50 caliber rifle.
Right. And that was a big – I mean, they did that to, I mean, I don't know, because I'm not sure any criminals are going out and using 50 cals to take out their, you know.
No,
it's not,
they're not.
They're
you
not.
Said we weren't going to talk politics.
Things. I know. I said we weren't going to talk politics. But it's one of those things where it's a scary looking gun, but it's not like, this is not what's being used to commit crimes.
Well, if you're also telling me bullets are like $5.
Yeah. This
oh,
is
yeah.
That's the thing. The like, bullet. That is not cost effective.
No.
If, no,
you know.
So whoever passed that law did it just to make a point.
There's a lot of posturing.
A little theater.
It's a little theater. Yeah. Look, we did something. We made you safer. Oh, great. You kept rich doctors from buying $10,000 rifles. Congratulations. You know, I mean, it's
like, are they $10,000?
Yeah, I mean, you can get into a 50 caliber rifle for less than that. I think we have one model that's down in the fours or fives, but it's a single shot bolt action.
The yeah. bargain bin.
It's a really nice rifle. But the M107A1 now, MSRP is about 12 grand. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So it's not a thing. And, you know, they're not that easy to use. They're so fun. If you have one, you know how impressive it is. But it's like you can't run down your local indoor range and pop off a few rounds, which yeah. you should have never
shoot,
started at. You
it'll
should
shoot
start
through
outside.
The back.
We got to get her at your place and shoot.
And outside range is so much more pleasant when you're new. I think where you're by yourself. It's not as loud, you know. It's like, that's how you need to do it. And, like, yeah, we can do that.
I was getting irrationally angry at the guy next to us because I'm like, do you mind?
Because you know when one of us is about to shoot,
right.
you're mentally prepared for
like,
the noise. This guy would just randomly just be firing.
Well, yeah, I mean, I get that he's doing his thing, but inside my head, I'm like, really, dude?
Yeah.
Really?
It can literally give you Tourette syndrome.
Yeah.
Start yelling things. It's I know.
So, I was on your Instagram page and I see that you are you went, by the way, his Instagram is Chris G. Barrett.
Yes.
Yeah. And then it's got a picture of him. But I see that you have well, it's like a cartoon picture, so I brought it up.
Yeah.
Apparently you're into cars.
Oh yeah.
What's your daily driver? What do you like?
I drive a second gen Ford Raptor every day.
You ought to see this thing outside. This Ford Raptors, when you get them nice in that gunmetal gray, it looks like a tank.
Is it gunmetal gray?
It's not.
On purpose?
It's avalanche gray.
It's avalanche gray, but it's whatever.
That truck satisfies. I love fast cars, but I love off-road vehicles. And I use mine off-road a lot, not on high-speed desert running, but just I've got a big farm and I use it off-road a lot. But that thing satisfies a lot of it scratches a lot of itches.
Yeah. What do you have? Did you do anything to it?
No. Stock.
Really?
Yeah. There's not much you want to do. I mean, with the Raptor, it's pretty much, it's ready to go
from
the factory.
There's stuff you can do, but like it's, you know, when I was young, I used to like to modify cars. And then when you actually get old enough to just buy a fast car, like you realize how great a stock fast car
is. A well-engineered vehicle is so much nicer than anything you're going to add to it most of the time.
I don't want to break anything either. I'm like, people are, you crank the boost up and we go 700 horsepower. It's like, okay. It's fast. It rides great. It does great off-road. They're really great.
What's your fast cars do you have?
I'm without right now. My last one was a Lamborghini Huracan. And so I sold that probably. It was this year and I'm like, thanks for bringing it up, man. I'm kind of sad about it.
What is it? A Lamborghini Huracan?
Yeah.
We call it a hurricane.
Huracan. Yeah. Huracan.
Oh my God! Is it a hurricane?
Huracan.
Without an E.
It is a Huracan. I see.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so.
Yeah. That is the baddest thing.
Look at that.
That was the fastest car I've ever had, and I think it kind of like everything else is messed up for me now. I'm like, nothing else compares. And I got rid of it because I was like, I can't drive this thing anywhere. You know, it's too flashy.
What color was it?
It was Mantis Verde, which is Italian for really green.
Really
it's like,
green.
Like Skittles green.
I see it. I'm looking at your car right now.
Yeah.
Did you have the red and white stripe at the bottom of the door?
No.
Just all green?
All green, yeah.
That is very green.
8-speed?
I think it was a 7-speed. It's a 7-speed dual clutch. So it's an auto-shifting manual transmission, and it is – that thing is furious. It is angry, but it's also – you can drive it. It is fairly civilized when you put it in normal mode, but when you put it in sport or Corsa mode, it is just like the angriest vehicle. It's blowing blue flame at the back, popping and banging, and it's awesome.
My best friend
– rent one. Don't buy one.
My best friend is from Germany, and he used to say all the time, why would anyone in America buy a car like that? Because you have speed limits. It's true. You need to live.
Yeah, but it's not that. It's.
Did you ask him why we won the war?
I make fun of him all the time about that. My favorite joke he ever told.
Than your grandpa.
My favorite joke. We were in France one time together, and he made a joke about, I mean, look, we lost the war, but we didn't lose it in 2 weeks. And that is, to this day, the funniest thing I've ever heard.
Oh, like talking about France.
About France. I'm like, yeah, we lost the war, but we didn't lose it in 2 weeks. Wow. All right.
God, I've gone down Huracan Lane hole.
Oh yeah,
the H is silent.
It's Huracan. So awesome.
Huracan.
No, you don't have to be pretentious and say it that way. We're in the South. It's a hurricane.
Hurricane.
It's a hurricane.
I got me Cone a Lambo hurricane.
Yeah, well.
Did you ever pull up to a red light when you had it and there'd be some kid with Japanese writing in the window behind next to you with a big fin on the back of his Honda. Whatever.
And he wanted to challenge you.
That happened a couple of times, but more often it's like, a soccer mom that doesn't know that I'm packing 610 horsepower and she's got her, whatever, SUV.
What?
And
she'll roll the window down and...
Ladies are aggressive drivers.
Yeah?
I think so.
I like that.
You on in my Jeep Cherokee.
Right. More. I think the biggest problem with driving it was people would almost run into you. I had people pass me on I-24... A truck of Dodge Ram with some good old boys pulled up on I-24. The kid is sitting on the windowsill out of the vehicle with his arm on the hood, the roof of the truck, and he's videoing me driving down I-24. We're doing 80. I'm like, somebody's going to die from
Big D and I are both pilots, and that's the one thing that gets me, you fly for a while, and a close call in the air is within a mile. Mm. When you get out of the plane, and you've got somebody else doing 80 miles an hour next to you, 18 inches away, and you realize that they're also Snapchatting at the same time. It freaks me out. I used to love to drive fast, but I think the whole thing about flying is it taught me that, if you're on a closed course, have at it.
Yeah.
But on the roads, man, with people, because nobody's paying attention. They're not looking anymore.
Yeah. It's horrifying.
Crazy, man.
It is horrifying.
What's going to be your next ride?
I want this new, the Porsche 992. The new 911, like this, the next generation is just coming out. And Porsches are not, nod to your German friend here, they're not as exciting. Like, they're not as outlandish at all, but that's what I think is great about it. It's a thinking man sports car. They are really, really good. The engineering on that thing is awesome. It doesn't stand out like a Lamborghini does. It's not a statement piece like that.
Right.
But,
it's not Skittle Green.
Yeah. And I think,
Skittle Green is a good color.
You can.
That is what it looked like. Looked like Skittle Green.
They have, it depends on which model you can get it. I mean, actually, who am I kidding?
At that price, you
can get whatever you want.
Right. So you can, but you can get an understated 911 that is horrifyingly fast, but also, you can
take
pull
it down,
up
and, go to dinner and have a nice, yeah, yeah, I get it.
Not be horrified to park it somewhere. People aren't going to run off the road trying to look at you.
Where would you park that thing? Would you park it away from everyone?
That was one of the, I didn't want to drive it. I mean, and I'm not like that about cars, but when you have one of those, I don't even know how to get this thing fixed if somebody does something to it.
Sure.
And normally when I come to Nashville, I would valet it somewhere. Like, you take it to the Omni and give the guy $20, say, hey, can we leave this up? They want to leave them up front anyway.
Yeah.
So they just leave it up there, and I'm like, well, okay, I think it's safe now because you guys are watching it.
Just picturing Ferris Bueller, though.
Yeah.
They're just taking off. Yeah.
They take off. They're driving it all over Chicago. Man,
well, the thing is, there was this Lamborghini, and I don't know what kind of fancy kind it was, but I know it was bright orange, that I used to see a lot at Chili's, of all places. And the problem is, I would see people, every time I was there and the Lamborghini happened to be there, you'd always see people selfieing with it.
Oh, yeah.
Which would, it's not even my car. And I'm like, oh, what if they have like rivets in their jeans?
Right.
Oh, they would touch it?
Oh, they would lean on it?
Yeah, because people have no boundaries. Have you know no that. Boundaries. They're total jerks.
Oh, my God.
And yeah, that's not your car. And no, because they've got a selfie because they're never going to own it.
It was at the Chili's?
Yeah, Chili's in Smyrna.
That's when a hillbilly gets money.
That's right.
Hey, well, we're going to Chili's.
The server told me we're going to get some queso. Let's do it.
The server told me that like the dude and his wife that would, they came in all the time and they always use coupons. And I'm like, well, that's how they afford a Lamborghini.
They use coupons.
They probably invented some gun and sold it to the government. Some kind of crazy, unbelievable story.
Okay,
like
so
that.
Let's be honest. Not many people watching or listening to this will ever afford a Barrett 50 cal in any model.
The only way they'll ever touch one is if they're in the military.
Yeah. What is this?
One of the things that has really got me excited the last few years. We hunt, almost everybody at Barrett hunts or shoots in some form. And that's the thing I love about our company, by the way. Like, nobody's punching the clock. Everybody loves what we do. So we hunt. I hunt. And we have come out with our first true hunting rifle. And it's called the Fieldcraft. And it's I wish I could have brought you one that wasn't, that didn't have all the stuff on it. This is the one that rides around in my truck during hunting season, during deer season. So it's already got a scope mounted.
So this is your.
Yeah.
That way, personal. If you see a deer while you're driving, you can just pull over and.
Well,
yeah.
Pow.
Yeah.
Bam.
So what's
a silencer on it?
What do you like
on
about
the front
this?
Of it?
All right. The base rifle, like the rifle without the stuff on it, if you get the 308 version, it weighs 5 pounds.
Oh, wow.
It is so light. You can pick it up with two fingers. It's really light. It's a compact rifle. It is supremely accurate. It's we put everything. Yeah, play with that one. We put everything.
It is clear,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
it is clear.
Okay. Yeah,
clear magazine.
No loaded weapons in the studio today.
that we know of. You know, that's actually pretty light, even with a suppressor and a scope, a pretty heavy scope on it. That's still pretty light. So
the scope is what's making this thing heavy,
and the can on the end. Yeah, but it's a hand-laid carbon fiber stock, so the stock weighs a pound.
Oh my
it's
goodness.
just
so it's lighter beautiful. Than wood.
Yeah. Oh, much, much lighter.
And you said you don't shoot without a. You try not to shoot without a suppressor.
Right.
Now, because
that's rude to shoot without a suppressor. Just
it scares the animals.
Man, I'm not an animal. I mean, come on.
Yeah, he was saying that. Once you use it with a suppressor on a hunting, you'll never go back.
That's a thing that I think a lot of. It's going to be hard for some traditional hunters to accept, but it's getting more and more accepted, as these new kids that grew up kind of on AR-15s, as they're getting out in the woods, the ones that do get out in the woods and hunt, suppressors are kind of getting more commonplace. And it's funny, in Europe, you see a lot more. I've hunted in Sweden, and they all have suppressors on their rifles. Why would you not? It would be like going out there and ripping the muffler off your vehicle. So I'm just going to drive around like this.
Well, they have to in Sweden, because if they shoot something, they might have an avalanche that starts.
True.
So do you you've got to tell Bob about your experience in the helicopters?
Yeah,
shooting off the platforms.
Oh man, I've done that twice now. So the
like
first
for hunting?
Well, it's technically not hunting. It is hog extermination.
Right. Gotcha.
So I've done this in Texas, and you cannot hunt from an aircraft. That's illegal. But exterminating hogs, that is. Promoted like it's they're very much encouraging that, because if you haven't been to Texas or if you're not a hunter, you may not understand this. People go, why are you doing that? It seems crazy. You have no idea. Like, until
the hogs
you seen,
are the scourge of the earth.
You have to kill 90% of them. This is what I've heard from TWRA, our wildlife resource agency. You have to kill 90% of hogs, wild hogs, to maintain the same number. They breed so fast.
Worse than rabbits.
Yes, they can have 3 litters a year. So they can just, they breed all the time. So
and
we
they
go
just
to,
devastate.
Yeah, and when you see it from the air, you really get it. When you fly over a field that is growing peanuts or corn or whatever, and you say, hey, why did they plow up that section of the field? Like, you think they brought a tractor out there and, like, plowed it. Mm. Like, oh, no, that's pigs. Like, what? Like, an acre gone, like, out of this field, just gone, destroyed. And so, yeah, they're really, really bad in Texas. We're starting to get them in Tennessee. So first time I went, we went to a place in Texas, and we were in a Robinson R-44. So you guys are pilots. You might know what that
it's
one is.
The it's the helicopter with the tall-looking thing on the top.
It's a piston, naturally aspirated engine. Not a bad helicopter. It was kind of small. I'm a big boy. I was in the back seat, kind of crunched up in there. But we had that experience first, and that was great. But this last time I went, we went to a place north of Austin called Last Shadow. Got to plug them, Last Shadow. And their Instagram page is awesome also. Great footage on there. They have got McDonnell Douglas 600s. 600 Echo, I think it is. It's the like stretched out version of a 500. So in the back, it's got club seating. I call it club seating. I mean, it's
still pretty tight.
But you can put five dudes in a pinch back there.
It's I guarantee you, it's not any nicer than Alan Jackson's bell that we took to Walmart that time. Remember that?
Yes.
We did a.
Oh my God!
You remember that?
I forgot
they
about
called
that.
It the helicopter. So Hello. We would take the helicopter out and meet people.
Nice.
It was just a really. This is just these two idiots trying to get in a helicopter for fun.
Yeah.
And get someone else to pay for it.
Not only a helicopter, but Alan Jackson's helicopter.
Alan Jackson's helicopter.
I mean, that's how. Yeah. That's how.
A helicopter.
Why? If you had the opportunity to take a helicopter to Walmart, wouldn't you?
Yeah, of course you would.
Okay.
You know,
thank
you get in the back.
Don't give us any slight on that.
He's got nav screens up that are mounted up. And then he has, it's all leather, of course, and then gold trim like Trump.
Yeah.
All inside it. Yeah. And, you know, you just put on your ears, and it was the smoothest.
Like
most,
being in a limo.
It was
like you didn't
awesome.
Even realize when you got off the ground.
So I haven't been in anything. That sounds big.
It's pretty big. What was that?
It was a Jet Ranger, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think it was. Faster. Helicopters normally aren't very fast.
You also didn't get to shoot pigs out of the
we didn't do that.
The deal with shooting the pigs.
Call them up.
The deal with exterminating hogs is you have to shoot behind them, which is so crazy to me because I've always shot up from the ground. And, you know, when you're shooting, you have to lead and all that. But you can't do that whenever you're in the helicopter because the bullets are going faster than the hogs.
And it's entirely dynamic. You know, depending on how you're circling around the target. So, you know, if your pilot has got you tracking even with a hog, you're basically just shooting right on because you're both moving at the same speed. You know, if they're coming towards you, it's straight on. If they're running away, so your leads change constantly.
You have to be aware of your speed relative to whatever you're shooting.
And it's a bit instinctive also, and you get the hang of it after about 30 minutes. You know, or after maybe five or six you've shot, you're like, okay.
Does
now,
anyone
like, I'm
go
getting
and
tuned up.
Harvest the meat from these things? Or
negative. No. You are not allowed to land the helicopter or touch the hog.
Well,
you leave it laying on the spot.
Really?
Coyotes take care of it. And then you fly back a few minutes later and take care of the coyotes. I'm serious. We shot like six coyotes.
Is that legal?
Yeah, baby. Okay. Man, coyotes. Yeah, yeah, predators.
Oh, my goodness. Then you fly back a few minutes later and take care of the coyotes. Is my favorite thing anyone said in here all day.
We did that. I had the highlight of my hunting career to this point, I think. I did some cool stuff in Africa, but maybe the coolest thing I've done was out of that McDonnell Douglas, I shot a coyote that was running. And, I mean, the coyotes haul. I mean, the hogs are pretty fast, but these coyotes are hauling, and they're small. So I shot this thing, and it had enough juice still to make it to a pond. Like, I guess I hit it in the back. It jumps into the pond, like this huge water tank, you know, to feed livestock. And this is awful. It's swimming, and there's, like, blood coming out behind it.
Oh, man.
Like the oil spill, but I finished him real quick after that.
Again, once you hear this, understand hunters give so much for the conservation efforts. If you were outlaw hunter, I know, but I just want to make this.
Come face to face with a coyote, you're not upset.
No,
you've
but
ever
I do want to say, I do want to say this
upset.
Because people never talk about this. Hunters voluntarily voted. They said they told Congress back in the early 1900s, "Hey, go ahead and throw an 11% tax on everything," and that money goes directly towards the conservation efforts. Mm-hmm. If you got rid of hunting, you would get rid of conservation. All of our national parks would suffer. Everything. Hunting is keeping it all working.
We pay
working.
For licenses that pay heavy taxes.
Yeah, but dude,
so
everything, every bullet,
stuff,
every,
all
every
of it.
Bullet, every Barrett, every everything is, it's got that flat tax on it that is paid for, and it goes directly to the conservation effort. So before somebody goes, oh, that's cruel or whatever, understand that there is a reason that we have all this stuff.
And I'll let Chris pat himself on the back. You're a conservationist.
Oh,
also.
Huge. Maybe I shouldn't have told that story because that does sound awful. If you don't, like you said, if you don't know, if you heard that, you might go, oh, that's weird. But if you are involved in this stuff every day and looking at the health of our wildlife herds and knowing that there's a overrun of predators and like nuisance animals, and we are the only predator that takes care of them, this stuff doesn't feel weird to me at all. So it's like this is a completely natural part of it. So Maybe I shouldn't have brought that one out in the cover. You guys can bleep that out later. I'll tell you about it later. Awesome. My trip to Africa, I was talking about, I've only been once so far, which surprised people. Like, you haven't been to Africa yet. I'm like, no, I haven't. Once you do that, it'll all be settled for you about this.
Now, yeah, because the trophy hunter thing is very controversial. Because if you go by what you see on Facebook, you're going to get one story. But if you go by what's really going on in Africa, it changes the narrative completely. But nobody wants to tell you that. Can you kind of...
Have either of you guys been?
No, God, no.
Okay, when you...
I would love to.
When you get on social media, a hunter who has been a hunter his whole life, or this is a lifetime achievement thing, they are going to post a photo of them with the animal that they took. That's going to happen. You don't post a photo of, like, here we were getting ready, here we were, you know, helping the local economy there. Like, no, you post the photo of the animal you took. That was like the culmination of this.
The harvest is the end game of why you went there to begin with.
Right. And what I learned when we went is I knew it. I've been told this through the organizations I've been involved with all this time, and I knew this already, but until you see it, you just really don't know what hunters do for the environment, like the actual place, the habitat where the animals live, in many places would not exist anymore if it was not for hunters. Because, you know, a piece of dirt that you can build something on, as human beings, we build stuff on it. And hunters are some of the only reasons why some of these places still exist and why the animals exist there, especially in Africa. So we went to South Africa. We were hunting in the Free State, which is in the center of the country of South Africa. A lot of these lands, if it wasn't for hunters coming there, bringing money, bringing that type of tourism, that land would have been cleared of the indigenous animals a long time ago, and they would have put cattle and corn on it.
Yeah, the hunters are the ones who are most adamant about fighting poaching as well.
Oh, yeah.
Illegal poaching in Africa is a scourge, and it's something that they've been battling for decades, and I don't know if they're ever going to get a handle on it. I mean, it's crazy how bad it has gotten. And I also think, though, the meat, the harvest from the meat and all that kind of stuff, the money that goes to the actual villagers and the villages and whatnot, is it's amazing. Like, nobody talks about that either.
No, and I saw that firsthand. We took another thing people need to understand about Africa: nothing goes to waste. Nothing. I mean, it's like nobody's shooting an animal and leaving it there or taking the head off of it. It's nothing goes to waste. We took meat into town, and we took some to a community of basically of homeless people that were living in shipping containers and tarps. We took them meat, and I'm telling you what, I mean.
Well, that's part of the tourism, as the way they promote it, if I'm not mistaken, that you get to be a part of the efforts to help feed these people and help them.
It's so different from the United States, too. When I handed pieces of, like, animal to people, and they were thrilled to get it. And then, you know, kind of in a little bit of a contrast to that, we also took some in the same town to basically what was like a hospice facility. You know, what we would call I don't know what you would call it here, because I can't call it a nursing home, what we have here, assisted living. It's kind of sad.
It's worse. It's like a hospice.
They were doing their best there, but I'm like, hey, you know what? Are your lights not working here? Oh, yeah, we turn them off in the day to save money. Like, wow. We don't have the lights on. You know, and it looked like a nice place for really old people to get care, but it's not to the standards of United States citizens.
Yeah.
And as we sit here,
we complain about stale donuts. Oh, I don't want that.
Yeah. Well, we brought these people we took them? I think we took them a kudu. Like half of a kudu, and that's going to make stew and food for them for a long time. They were thrilled to get this. I mean, it was like you backed up a truck full of money.
What is a kudu?
It's one of the iconic African animals. It's got the corkscrew.
I was going to say, yeah.
It looks like an antelope, but it's different.
Yeah, I know.
I just
exactly
got a
mean.
Text from Zeke Stout, who you know from the Discovery Channel, who's going to be doing a podcast with us soon. I met Chris through Zeke, and he just sent me a text that said, ask him who taught him to make his beard so luxurious.
Oh, that's true.
guessing that means it was him.
Yeah. Yeah, we were in Vegas. I was like, man, why is your beard so pretty? And I said, look at mine, Zeke. It's like, it's frizzing out, and it looks just ridiculous. Looks unkept. And he says, I got you. And like a few weeks later, an Amazon package shows up, and it's Grave Before Shave, like beard balm and a wood comb. Can't go back.
No, wow. Zeke, please. Dude, you gotta hook Patrick up.
So, what are you talking? You never. voluntarily fixed my beard.
Patrick needs
that stat.
Quick.
It's really good.
Okay, before we run out of time, what's in the bag?
Okay, this is, you know, I talk about things we're excited about. This is, I'm glad I set you guys up with what it meant to have an M designation for my dad, to have a rifle adopted by the U.S. military. A rifle that I designed that was the 98B and then became the MRAD has been entered in a competition for U.S. SOCOM. A competition is called ASR. It's Advanced Sniper Rifle. And this is what we hope that this is selected officially, because if so, it will be getting its military U.S. military designation. Oh, it won't be an M. It will be a MARC because it's coming in through SOCOM and the Navy. So anything that comes in, like a MARC 19 grenade launcher, if it comes in through the Navy or through, you know, the SEALs or SOCOM, it's a MARC. If it comes in through the U.S. Army, it's an M. So we hope that this gets a MARC. We will be... I told you how weird it was to have a single person design a rifle that's been adopted by the U.S. military. If this happens, we'll be the first father and son ever for this to happen.
Wow.
So this is our can you pull that out, Patrick, so I don't pull off of the mic right now? The this is our MRAD rifle, but this is the actual submission version that went to SOCOM as ASR. So it's got all the crazy – oh, it might be – it's still strapped in, yeah. It has all of the exactly the way they wanted it to meet all of the specifications. So it's the right color. It's got all the every little detail.
And so this would be used as like a sniper, like a lighter weight sniper rifle.
It is very lightweight for the calibers it shoots. But the big thing about it was they were looking for modularity to shoot different cartridges for different missions.
What the heck is that?
So this is MRAD, which is. It's a clever little name. It stands for multi-role adaptive design, but it's also MRAD is also the unit of measurement. That
I love that stock, you know, folding up like that.
Yeah, the stock folds and deploys like this. This rifle, the big feature about it is that it's so modular. The calibers change in about 30 seconds, so we can loosen these two bolts, pull the barrel at the front, change the bolt head if necessary, and we can shoot a different caliber.
In
which
30
is
30 seconds.
Yeah. Which is exactly what SOCOM wanted to do. So they wanted to shoot these new calibers called 338 and 300 Norma Magnum, and they wanted to shoot the old 308. So they wanted this to be convertible to all of those. You know, it's got its own suppressor. That's a very light titanium suppressor you can feel there. Yeah. So the rifle, this is our ASR submission. So this is not, you know, in this configuration, this is not available to the public. It's and not for any reason other than we just haven't built it yet, but this is exactly it met and exceeded every requirement they had. So it's not super light, but it is for what it shoots and what it does. Yeah. That
this
rifle
feels like I don't know,
like you're
like
a man
part of a tank. Yeah.
Did you just grow more hair on your
I
face?
I have more hair on my face now after I held that.
This is, I mean,
you know, this
is beautiful.
To think
first
about
of all.
This is could be possibly be the next. I mean, it's just pretty cool to hold this, man. Not to be goofy or anything.
Before it's actually in service?
How much, I mean, not to hyperbolize, but how much does that mean to you if this?
I can quit. Like, I could really, it's one of those things where you could just say, okay.
I did it.
Like, that's good. You know, if you can do something, I idolize my father. I think he's a great man. He's done some great stuff. And, you know, shouldn't say that without thanking God. I know that for a fact. Like, it's. We are here, you know, beyond what we deserve, and it's just been an incredible ride.
Show
but if this can happen for me, you know, and our company, and for him, it would mean a lot to everybody. And I don't want to pop corks on champagne yet, but it's looking really sure. So,
dude, what are you doing? Stop!
I know.
Oh my God, did you just do that?
I know.
Someone doesn't know the jinx rule.
Hey, man, I've been here before. See, this
program. Have you watched an NFL game, though? NFL basically is if they go, and this person hasn't thrown an interception in 22 games.
And guess what?
The very next pass.
Yeah.
Yeah, it always happens.
But you know how this works.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You've seen us.
We've been here before. You know, almost a decade ago, there was a program called PSR, Precision Sniper Rifle. And we submitted essentially this rifle. It's evolved some since then. And we got outed on a technicality. They said our technical submission, which is like the paperwork, did not arrive through their mail server. It arrived 30 minutes late past the deadline. So our rifle was not considered.
That smells stinky.
That sounds like the government to me.
Another big company won won it and was never able to deliver and never able to perform. If I think this rifle would have been adopted a long time ago. So we kind of now, that's why I say I've been here before.
Yeah, and okay, I get you. So now they're like, okay, let's do this for real now.
Let's do it right.
And probably the people who were part of that decision are gone.
That happens in the military. Yes, that happens too in the military, you know, as we promote guys through. So.
Well, dude, congrats on everything. It's really cool. It's really cool to meet you, man, and just kind of get the story. And
I mean, it's an American dream story. Fans, is what it is.
We're fans of the brand and the family and the story. It really is an honor to meet you and have you come in.
I want to be totally honest, though. I knew that this would be interesting and different, and I knew that Big D and Bubba would love talking to you about guns for an hour or whatever. But this is all just the long play to get you to let us come over and shoot guns.
Well, I was gonna. I wasn't gonna let you get out of here without inviting you guys. Yeah, I want you guys to come down to the factory.
Come on to the factory, shoot some guns. Well,
okay, I would love to do that. But can we make sure that Zeke Stout goes with us too?
Well,
because
that
way he could fit. We could do two things at once. We could hang out with him. We could let you guys talk, and y'all can fix together. Together, fix Patrick's beard.
Yeah.
Sounds like a sponsorable opportunity.
This is like a man spa day.
Man spa.
We're going to shoot rifles and fix beards. Oh, yeah.
I'm jealous. And then you get a hot towel over your face at the end.
The hot towel.
Did you ever done? You ever gone where they do the straight razor?
Absolutely.
Awful. Never do it.
Oh, it's great.
The first time you do it, you're not used to it, and it gets so close that your face is like on fire.
Oh, I love that feeling. They
did it, and then I'm walking out, and Bob and I are looking at each other, and he's like, "Dude, you're like, it looked like someone got a cat angry
up here on the front of the face."
Oh yeah,
I haven't shaved in a long time, and you know I have had the back of my neck done with one of those, and that's as far as we're going. I get it. I get it.
I let them do everything, and I mean everything.
Somebody went to Brazil.
Yes. All right, that's a good time to end the podcast right there.
That's where you don't want a straight razor.
No, guys. Did you have to hold a mirror while this was happening?
I did. Yeah. I had to.
You held the mirror?
I held the mirror for him, yeah.
Thank you, Big D.
We're pals. That's what we do.
By the way, the podcast, once again, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better prices every day. Thanks for letting us indulge in a little selfishness here because we really wanted to talk to you because it's a fascinating story and it's cool. And fingers crossed, knock on wood, I hope that this new rifle is adopted. That would be fantastic. And I mean, I want to see everybody live their dreams. And you know, like you said, you know, you look at your dad as your hero for being able to do that himself. And now to yourself have that same opportunity, it would be like a kid making it to the NFL whose dad played in the NFL kind of thing. And this is the big leagues.
Manning. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
You would be the Peyton Manning of rifles.
You're the Peyton Manning of guns.
I'm a pitcher of fitness. Come on.
Thank you, man. We appreciate it. Thank you. You, by the way, if you want to follow him, you can. Chris G. Barrett on Instagram. And then, of course, Barrett Firearms.
Yeah, here.
Yep. Barrett Firearms on Instagram also.
Yeah. Barrett.net is the website. All right. Thank you, man. We appreciate it, Chris.
Thank you.
Thank you, man.
This was the podcast, but now it's over. But that's okay, because you can listen to the regular show on the radio every day. It was the podcast. The regular show.